Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For the country as a whole, the number is that 1% of the population gets almost a quarter of all the income, 40% of all the wealth.
Now, a second take on inequality in America. On yesterday's show, we heard Nobel Prize-winning Columbia University economist Joseph Stiglitz there decry the growing concentration of wealth in America and its implications for democracy and for the country as a whole, other than the top 1%.
Most Americans, let me repeat, most Americans are worse off than they were 10 years ago, a dozen years ago. So it's actually trickle-up economics. All the gains in our economic growth have gone to those at the top.
It's all in a new Vanity Fair article that just came out. Today, the dean of the Columbia University Business School responds. Glenn Hubbard, a former chairman of President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors. His latest book out last year is Seeds of Destruction, Why the Path to Economic Ruin Runs Through Washington and How to Reclaim American Prosperity. Dean Hubbard, we really appreciate you doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. A pleasure.
Let's see if you first can agree on some facts with Joseph Stiglitz before you have your own opinions. Stiglitz's article says the top 1%, we just heard the clip, now earn 25% of the income in the U.S., twice as much as 25 years ago, when they only earned 12% of all the income. Do you agree with that number?
That number's roughly right. That top 1% would pay about 35% of all the federal taxes as well.
And he says the top 1% now have 40% of the wealth. Roughly, yes?
Yes, that's roughly true. And it's been highly concentrated in American experience. But yes, that's roughly true.
And as the richest are getting relatively proportionally richer, and richer in real terms, he says those in the middle have actually seen their incomes fall in real dollars. For men with only high school degrees, for example, down 12% in the last quarter century. And he says all the growth in income has gone to those at the top. Do you quarrel with any of that?
Most of the growth in incomes has been for people at the top of the income distribution. I don't think any economist would quarrel with that.
And listeners, we will open up our phones, as we did yesterday for Joseph Stiglitz, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, on day two of discussing inequality in America. And Stiglitz says our inequality ranking would be somewhere around Iran or Russia, which he characterizes as an oligarchy, while most of Europe is much more equal than the U.S., and Brazil is striving to reduce inequality, while our policies under Clinton and Bush both were designed to increase it. Here's another clip of Stiglitz.
Today, the United States has less opportunity than old ossified Europe. The way economists talk about this is socioeconomic mobility. What is the probability of somebody at the bottom moving to the middle, middle moving to the top? And those numbers are worse than in many other countries in the advanced industrial countries, though we were much better at the end of World War II.
So, Dean Humbert, how would you characterize the international context similarly or differently from Joseph Stiglitz?
Well, I think Joe exaggerates a bit, but it is true that the U.S. has for some time had a more unequal distribution of income and wealth. There is still significant income mobility in America. We know that from longitudinal studies of tax return data. But I agree with Joe, who's my colleague here at Columbia and a friend, that income inequality is a big problem for the country. Where we sharply disagree is on what to do about it.
Tell me what you think income. Oh, so you agree that it's a big problem. It's
absolutely.
It's not your idea of a country to be satisfied with or proud of when 1% of the population owns 40% of the wealth.
Well, the question is how to have broad-based prosperity. You know, there are two elements in prosperity. One is overall growth, and the U.S. did have a productivity boom beginning in the mid-1990s that's been very good for our collective living standards. I share Joe's concerns that those gains have not been as broadly shared as in booms we had, for example, in the 1950s and 1960s. And the question is why? And I think there are a number of aspects of the world and of public policy that have made that so, and many of them we can change.
One of the whys, according to Stieglitz, has to do with our politics and whether this is a free country in the way we like to think. He says with our loose campaign finance laws, like most recently Citizens United, more concentrated wealth buys more concentrated power, especially in the finance sector, which buys policies that concentrate more wealth. So Wall Street, which made and securitized bad home loans, gets bailed out with the TARP while the borrowers get thrown out of their homes, and GE makes billions and pays no American taxes. He'd say it's because who pays for the power makes the rules. How much do you agree or disagree about that cycle of wealth and power?
Well, I think it's useful to look at the facts of where inequality comes from. We've had a period of time over several decades where returns to certain highly skilled occupations have risen dramatically in the United States and elsewhere. That's been amplified by globalization and has been really a big factor in inequality. I think very few economists think that taxes have much to do with it. This is really a pre-tax story. It's not a tax policy story. Joe and I agree that we've probably spent too much on subsidies in the financial services industry. That's a big theme of my own book that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But the real issues in inequality have to do with technology, returns to skill, and globalization. And so if we're going to do more than talk about it, if we want to actually address it, those are the areas we need to discuss.
So go into that a little bit. Where would you and he most disagree on solving the inequality problem?
Well, for me, the issue is less whether the top 1% are doing well, but more why we can't help the broad middle do better. And I think we can. And it starts with an improved education system. It starts with much more support for training for individuals between jobs. And it starts with a system that's less biased against saving and investment that could lead to more capital and higher productivity. There's another factor that doesn't often get mentioned, which is rising health care costs. I mentioned earlier that productivity had been growing a lot. That means typically wages would grow a lot. Well, it turns out compensation has grown a lot, but what has been soaked up there is really just higher expenditures on health care. So workers' take-home wages, as Joe correctly notes, have not kept pace. That's not a statement about the failure of the market to work. That's a statement that healthcare costs are rising too fast. Again, another thing we can do something about.
But you mentioned education and job training as key. He would say that in our fiscal crisis government budgeting of the moment, millionaires are getting state and federal tax cut extensions, while public schools all over New York and the nation are laying off teachers and depreciating education. Are these not inequality policies?
Well, we definitely need to strengthen education. As you know, a lot of the debate that's going on right now in spending in education is about the structure of public education, the role of unions. That's really a separate issue. But I don't think any economist would disagree with the notion that we need to have very strong support for public education. And it's not just K through 12, although that's very important. We need to have very strong support for community colleges. These are the institutions that are doing a lot of the skills training in our country and yet don't get the kind of public support that our major universities get.
But do we not need to look at millionaires' taxes, quote unquote, at the same time as we look at union pensions and how efficiently our education dollar is spent?
I think raising marginal tax rates would be a big mistake for the country. It would depress saving and investment and ruin our chances of growth. But that doesn't mean we can't raise more taxes. Many economists, including myself, have suggested that we scale back deductions and tax preferences that affluent taxpayers get. I've also suggested that we slow down the rate of growth of Social Security and Medicare benefits for affluent taxpayers. So yes, absolutely, we need to get affluent taxpayers to pay more.
He asked, if trickle-down economics worked, would we have seen the decades of middle-class wage stagnation while the top 1% got more and more since Reagan introduced the concept?
Well, we don't know for some of the reasons I mentioned before. We know that compensation has risen roughly with productivity, just like an Econ 1 book would tell you. What hasn't happened is wages. And that has to do, again, more with health care costs and benefit costs. And those are problems we can address. Now, frankly, as a matter of public policy, we've made it worse with the passage of last year's health care law. But we can do something about it.
And you've mentioned productivity several times. Improving. Stiglitz says salaries in the financial center are going sector are going up, while in manufacturing and so many middle class private sector professions, they're going down. He says that drains the talent pool away from sectors that would be more productive for the country if they had a more proportional income structure relative to finance. And he says wealth is not concentrated where it would be most productive for society. Therefore, and I'm going to play you this clip.
They looked at what happened to the financial crisis, and there was no sense of accountability. So what they have said is, we can't trust government because government is part of the problem because it is run by that 1%. So we had a crisis, and who got bailed out? The big banks. Who was left in the lurch? The millions of Americans who are losing their homes. 7 million have already lost their homes.
So, Dean Hubbard, I realize there's a lot in this question, but I think his bottom line point is, left to the free market alone, money doesn't necessarily find its most productive use.
Well, I don't think I buy that. Part of what happened in the financial crisis was government had advantaged lending in the housing industry, indeed encouraged lenders to reduce their lending standards in the so-called subprime market. So government did play a role, but frankly, so did Wall Street excesses. I absolutely agree with Joe that we should not have spent so much money in bailing out the financial sector. This could have been done much more efficiently, and we should be helping the millions of Americans who are underwater in their mortgages. I've suggested ways to do that. I'm sure Joe might have others. So, yes, he's absolutely right.
We're talking about inequality in America. We heard from economist Joseph Stiglitz yesterday. Today we're talking to the dean of the Columbia Business School, Glenn Hubbard, a former George W. Bush Council of Economic Advisors chairman and author of the book Seeds of Destruction, with a different response. Let's get a couple of callers in for you. Pete in Bergen County on WNYC. Hello. Pete, don't listen to your radio. Listen to your phone.
I am, if you're getting me.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Well, I had a whole bunch of things. One.
Pick your best one.
Well, do you know who Gibran is?
The author?
Yes, from The Prophet.
Okay.
He wrote something in this early 30s that was, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And he predicted the uprisings that are going on throughout the Middle East. And NPR had something when they asked people what was the reason for the uprisings.
Pete, forgive me, but I think that I must have gotten on to a different line than I thought I was going to, and I just want to stay on topic here, which I don't think you are for this segment. But thank you. Howard in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Brian and guest. My point and question is about crony capitalism. Crony capitalism in the conventional sense and also in the wider sense of the economy, where everything you do now seems to require a permit, a license, a certificate or something, and how that cuts out the marginal worker, the vocational worker, and helps concentrate the efforts to get those licenses and certificates in people who have the ability, the money, and the working capital to build larger businesses. Basically cutting out whole sections. And my corollary question is about the banking industry, the investment banking industry, and how crony capitalism helps protect them with huge profit margins. In any other industry, with profit margins as wide as in investment banking, you'd be teeming with entrants into that industry. Could you comment on that, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Howard. Dean Hubbard?
Well, a couple of great points. I think you are seeing now a lot more global competition in investment banking. Many mainline investment banking activities are not as profitable as they used to be. I couldn't agree with you more on the need to streamline any red tape on starting businesses and working. The World Bank all over the world tracks something called doing business indicators that are things like the number of days to start a job and a business, what does it take to run a business. Countries that are more efficient in that regard have higher growth and higher living standards, and we've got to stay vigilant on that. Couldn't agree more.
Joe on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I just want to know how much more productive you expect American workers to be to get themselves out of this this economic divide. We are as productive as we possibly can be. You go down to Wall Street, you know, at around 6 o'clock. Go to any of the bars there and see those productive people just, you know, laughing it up. I think their biggest, you know, moment of productivity was in 2008 when they productively took down the economy. We need regulation. This unseen, you know, hand of the market, it has to be guided. It's not some sort of God force that has to be left alone. We got the Bush tax cuts extended. There's more money in the coffers of the rich. Where are the jobs? Where are these jobs? They're overseas. I believe that they're trying to make America like a favela nation. The jobs will come back here as soon as we're willing to, so desperate we have to take a job for $1.50 an hour.
Joe, thank you. Dean Hubbard, are we becoming a favela nation in globalization? And how productive do American workers have to be if we're getting more productive all the time to keep our jobs?
I think the caller raises two outstanding points. The first is about productivity. We are not being fair to American workers. When I talked about healthcare costs and other things that are standing in the way of wages rising, this is a policy problem. American workers are very productive. They're the most productive in the world. They're not the problem. On regulation, the question is not more or less, but good and bad. The regulation that we've now passed in Dodd-Frank, unfortunately, doesn't address many of the problems we actually went through. I agree that we need more regulation, but we need it of housing finance, we need it of capital requirements, and we need it for transparency in financial services, and we didn't get any of it in the Dodd-Frank bill that just passed.
Now, I think John in Waterside Plaza wants to challenge the premise on which you and Joe Stieglitz agree, which is that things are getting generally worse for a broad middle class. John, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I had this argument with a friend, and I looked it up. The size of the average home since 1975 has doubled. The percentage of people going to college in 75 has doubled. I had to rent a television set in 75. I couldn't afford to buy a big color TV. Today, if you get an old tube TV, they're like, you know, $180. The cost of my first round trip to California from New York, I paid for it for 2 years on a credit card. Now it's the cost of a dinner out. Things have been getting incredibly better in the private sector. It's the government-run areas like education that have been the disaster.
I certainly agree with you that the consumption bundles people can buy today are much, much better and much cheaper. Well, the only point I was making, and I think Joe was making too, was that median wages had stagnated, not that your overall life experience or anyone's overall life experience had.
Thank you, John. Well, we're not going to solve it all here in two segments in 2 days on The Brian Lehrer Show, but inequality in America is a really important thing to talk about that we will talk about more. And we heard Joseph Stieglitz yesterday and in connection with his new Vanity Fair article. And then this other take from the dean of the business school at Columbia, Glenn Hubbard, just now, formerly in the Bush administration and author of the book Seeds of Destruction, Why the Path to Economic Ruin Runs Through Washington and How to Reclaim American Prosperity. And all I could say is you must have pretty interesting lunches up there at Columbia.
Indeed. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, I will tell you how, if you are interested in that debate, you might be interested in a debate that you can attend in person with me next week. Stay tuned.